We all have a sense that self-employment can be a trigger for growth. But this might help us understand why traditionally when governments have done things like give grants to self-employed businesses, the returns are often really low. Those businesses don't grow. A lot of these businesses don't want to be businesses. What they want really are jobs.
Welcome to VoxDev Development Economics. My name is Tim Phillips. In developing countries at any time, it's a rule of thumb that about half of rural workers who don't own land are not formally employed. So what are they doing? Well, if our glass is half empty, we might assume that hundreds of millions of people who want work are stuck in unemployment. Their labour is, in the economics jargon, rationed. But if our glass is half full, we might guess that they're not employed because most of them have found other ways to make money that they prefer by working for themselves. Well, an ingenious experiment in rural India gives us some clues about the extent of this labour rationing. And Supreet Kaur of Berkeley is one of the researchers who can give us, well, at least some of the answers as a result. Supreet, welcome back to VoxDev Development Economics.
Hello, Tim. Thanks for having me back.
Supreet, very often when I define terms, I see my guests wince a little bit. Have I defined whether a worker is rationed correctly? Is there anything we need to add to that?
Yeah, I think you got the basic gist of it. So when we say rationed, what we really want to capture is the idea that there is a person who wants a job, but they can't find one. And in our definition, we try to be a little bit more precise to make it very clear what we mean. So we say that a worker is rationed from doing wage labor if she meets two criteria. The first criteria is that this person prefers a job at the prevailing wage over what she's currently doing. So she could be home unemployed. She could be doing something else like working on her farm or running a business. And that's really important because even if you look like you're employed, say, you know, you're a vegetable vendor and you're selling vegetables on the side of the road, it could be though that you really want a job in the wage labor market. That's really what you'd prefer to be doing. And you're actually unemployed from that. And so you turn to do something else. So it's important that our definition of unemployment or rationing captures a idea that you could be doing anything, but what you really want is a wage job. The second part of our definition is that this person is actually employable in that job at the prevailing wage. So in other words, from the employer's perspective, she's qualified for that job. You could imagine if I was sitting at home and you came to me and said, Supreet, are you unemployed? And I said, oh, well, I've been looking for a job. I keep applying to be the editor of Vox, but they won't hire me. I can't find a job. I keep applying for all of these terrific things. I'm not qualified for that job. No one at Vox wants to hire me for that job. So you wouldn't necessarily think that I'm involuntarily unemployed or rationed from that job. So it's important that in our definition, we also think about the fact this person is not only wants a job and can't find one, but they actually are qualified for one, because that's really what then tells us something weird is going on in the labor market.
If you ever want to come and edit VoxDev, you're very welcome. We need all the help we can get. Why is it important, though, Supreet, to have an answer to this question? Why do we need to know how much labor rationing there is?
The amount of unemployment that sometimes we also call labor market slack is a basic measure of how healthy the economy is, how well it's doing. And when an economy works well, there shouldn't be a lot of rationing. It should be the case that people who are qualified to work and want to work, they should be able to find work. And when they can't, this means the supply of workers exceeds the demand for workers, something what we'd call excess labor supply. And so that means something is kind of out of whack in the labor market, that the labor market just isn't working the way it should be working. And so knowing that rationing exists matters because then we would want to think about policies to fix the problem. On one hand, we might directly want to intervene to help rationed workers. There's a lot of programs that help unemployed workers. There's things like workfare in developing countries, giving out cash transfers, so on. But how do we know if those kinds of things are needed? How do we figure out who to target for those? But then perhaps even more fundamentally, it tells us there's an underlying friction or problem in the labor market that's making it not function the way we think it should. And so if we know there's a lot of rationing, we can then try to understand what are the failures that give rise to it, and in an ideal world, then actually fix that underlying problem to lower the amount of unemployment. But just knowing that the unemployment exists is kind of our starting point.
You've done a lot of very careful work to try and establish how much labor rationing there is, but I've got a simpler way to do it. Can't we just go to a village and ask the people who are self-employed or unemployed whether they would prefer a job and then just count up the number who say yes? What's wrong with that?
Yeah. So, you know, that's actually a terrific idea. You know, I would start by saying, I mean, you know, you could have saved us a lot of trouble with this paper. But, you know, the funny thing is that most surveys, government accounts of how much unemployment there is, don't exactly even do what you suggested. So very important in what you said is, couldn't we ask the self-employed or unemployed if they want a job? And in fact, what most surveys do, whether it's the National Sample Survey in India or the US formal surveys that give us our unemployment numbers, if you say you're self-employed, you wouldn't count as being unemployed or rationed. And so to start with, what we basically do is we go in and we say to people, what are you doing right now? And if a person says, oh, I'm working on ABC, or I'm doing domestic duties, we would say, okay, great. It's only if you're sitting at home literally doing nothing that you would be counted as unemployed. Mm-hmm. And that's useful. It tells us that there is a set of people who are not doing anything productive, but that's not the same as this idea of rationing. So there is a sense of perhaps we could improve even how we ask questions on surveys. But even if we did that, I think there's this challenge that we just don't know how reliable it is. So if you go to someone and say, were you looking for a job and you couldn't find one? And they say, yeah, I really want a job. We just don't know if that's actually reliable. And in fact, in the US, people have done things where you go to someone, you ask someone, and then you go back the next week and you get a different answer, which kind of gives us this level of unease. And so up until now, we just have never known whether these kinds of survey questions are reliable or not. And our experiment is in some sense set up to answer this question so we can stack up survey measures with what happens when you actually figure it out based on behavior in the world.
So tell us about this experiment. What did you do and what's the theory behind it?
Yeah, so our basic approach was pretty simple. We go in, we do this kind of, I'll tell you what the intervention is in a second, but we go in, we do an intervention in the labor market. And if there is rationing, then the labor market should react to our intervention in one way. If there isn't rationing, it should react a different way. And so what we do is we just look at what happens to wages and employment, basically how the labor market reacts to discern between these two possibilities. So specifically what we do is in India, we treat villages as local labor markets. So every village is a labor ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And we go in and we do the following intervention in lots and lots of villages, randomly chosen villages. We offer really appealing jobs in external factories outside of the village to a bunch of people. And we offer these randomly to, you know, a subset of people in the village. And we offer a lot of jobs and get a lot of take up. So it's a really big hiring shock to the village. So on average, we hire 24% of the labor force of male casual workers in the village. And so these people who take up these external jobs, in some sense, they're removed from the local village market. They're not working there anymore. And so that reduces the labor supply in that village labor market. If there's no rationing, and everyone who wants to find a job can find one, then if you remove so many workers, employers are going to need to replace the ones who left, and they're going to have to raise wages. So wages should go up. And because labor is more expensive now, employers won't replace all of the workers who left. So employment levels in the village will fall. So that's kind of basic Econ 101 prediction from supply and demand. What happens if you reduce supply? But if there's rationing, we should see something really different happen. People who left to go do these other jobs, they're going to free up job slots in the local village labor market. And if there's rationing, there's a bunch of people sitting around who actually wanted those jobs anyway, but they couldn't get them. And so they're going to just go and fill in those job slots. And so we're going to see no change in the wage and no change in the employment level because everyone who left is just replaced by people who are waiting in the wings to get jobs at the prevailing wage. And so this is what in economics we'd call a revealed preference measure, because in some sense, by their actions, workers are revealing or showing us that they actually preferred these jobs over whatever they were doing before. And employers are showing us that these workers are qualified to be hired because they actually do hire them when the job slots open up.
But on the other hand, the amount of labor rationing, I imagine it's not, you know, naught or 100%. How can you back out a percentage figure for that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So then if we do this, what we basically have to do is we can just look at the size of the shock in the labor market. So in our experiment, if we go into a village and we remove a quarter of the workers, and we find the predictions that I laid out under rationing of no change in wages or employment, aggregate employment, then what that tells us that at least a quarter of workers in that labor market were rationed. At least a quarter of people were sitting there so that when a quarter of people leave, they're all replaced by another 25%, which means at least 25% were rationed. It could be there's even more than that waiting in the wings. They're still left over because there's not any more job slots left. But so what this really only allows us to do is get a lower bound on how much rationing there is. But because our shock size is really big, it allows us to get a pretty big lower bound.
Now, you did mention Econ 101, and we learn about labour markets, and then we find out that actual labour markets are nothing really like they are in Econ 101. So might it mess up your numbers if, for example, existing labour markets have a lot of frictions in them, or there is not competition between employers? Does that change what you're going to find out for percentage of slack?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I mean, we really ourselves are very aware of the fact that there could be a lot going on in these labor markets. And we ourselves have other work showing, for example, a lack of competition in these labor markets and other kinds of frictions. But what's, I think, really nice about this test that we do is it's not very sensitive to those. So these could be labor markets that are competitive. These could be labor markets where there's market power among workers, they have like a union, or market powers among employers where they have some sort of what we call monopsony power or market power in hiring. We actually don't take a stance on any of that, sort of anything goes. We just have a prediction that says you can fix all of those things, but if there is rationing, you should get the predictions we say should happen under rationing. Mm-hmm. If there's not rationing, so say you have any other kind of market failure, but there is not rationing, then if you do what we did, you have this hiring shock, then the wage should go up. This is true, for example, even under monopsony, if employers have market power, the wage should go up. So if we find our expected results, this would be evidence that rationing exists. And then we might want to turn to some of those underlying frictions and ask, well, are those some of the reasons or micro foundations why the rationing exists? Maybe those are some of the things that are giving rise to the rationing. So that in some sense is step two. But if we find what we want to find, we know for sure that that means that there is rationing here.
Okay, so last question on what you did. I remember when we spoke before, and it was about the financial strain that a lot of workers are under. And a lot of that was because their work was seasonal. And these are rural workers, so there'll be a lot of work at some times of the year, no work at other times of the year. Can your experiment allow for that?
Yes. So I think that's really essential, because you're right that these labor markets look so different when in peak seasons, when weeding is happening or harvesting is about to ramp up. Like, you know, the labor markets look really different than the lean seasons when there's really just not a whole lot going on economically. And so to try to understand that, we actually run this experiment across the year, across villages. So we run this in lean months, and we also run it in what we would call semi-peak months. So we never run the experiment kind of in peak harvest or planting times. We also run it in off times, like weeding season or kind of the shoulder seasons leading up to the peak season.
The results, did you find out that there is labor rationing?
We actually find a ton of labor rationing, but really, really importantly, it depends on what time of year you're in. In the semi-peak months, when there's more economic activity in villages, the labor market is remarkably nimble. Wages go up instantly, and you see the patterns on employment that you would expect it in an Econ 101 world, where local employment in the village is lower. And this is really remarkable because this happens over like a two-week period. So just immediately, we do this in 2 weeks, the labor market has recalibrated and responded to this hiring shock. In contrast, in the lean season, we see a ton of rationing. We get the predictions we would have expected under rationing, where nothing happens to the wage. There's no change in local aggregate employment. So that means we could hire all these people, give them all these external jobs. And not only does it make those people better off, but the people in the village who are there, they're able to take up the job slots that were vacated. And so they're better off as well. And so that tells us that in lean months, at least in our setting, about at least a quarter of labor supply is rationed.
What does this tell us about the lived experience of the people whose labor is rationed? Does it tell us anything we didn't know?
I think the first is it tells us that there is a lot of rationing. And I don't think we knew that for sure. I think that you could poll people and they might have different answers. And so it tells us in a really concrete term that rationing is a really big deal. And there's a lot of involuntary unemployment, at least in lean times, in the setting. It also tells us something about self-employment. So when we see people who are shifting into these jobs that are vacated, we can look to see who are these people? What were they doing before they went in and took up these wage jobs? And a lot of them are actually self-employed. They were doing, you know, they were working on their farm. They were running non-agricultural businesses at a small scale with low capital intensity. And what our experiment shows us is that a ton of people who are self-employed in villages actually just want wage jobs. If wage jobs were available, you would see a quarter less self-employment, at least in our sample.
And if you look within farm households, like among smallholder farmers, in lean months, about 50% or more than 50% of the farm labor that we see is actually forced entrepreneurship. People are doing that just because they can't find wage jobs. They prefer the wage jobs. And then the other thing we learned that we already kind of knew is that seasonality is a big deal. But what really hones in is that it's not the case that as employment demand adjusts, that the labor market is adjusting with it. So wages are not adjusting with changes in demand. And so there's these periods in the lean season where things are out of whack. The wage is at one level and there's a ton of unemployment.
If you add this up across all low-income countries, this is potentially huge news. So if I'm a policymaker and I have responsibility for some local labor markets of the type that you investigated, what should I be doing if I'm confronted with your evidence?
Well, I think there's a few things. The first is you shouldn't just assume that the surveys that you're running are giving you the right unemployment numbers.
Of course,
yes. In some sense, a lot of policy is informed by just going and running these surveys and saying, okay, well, now we understand how much unemployment there is, and now we can target policy according to that. We stack up our evidence with just using the unemployment questions that are used in the national sample survey. We take the same exact question. It drastically underestimates how much labor rationing there is. So I think that suggests the importance of trying other ways to ask in surveys, even if we are only using a survey approach. I think that can be improved. And so thinking about other ways to figure out how much unemployment there is, I think is important so that policy is guided by the right set of facts. And then I think a couple of other things it tells us, it is really important to design policies to help people through the lean season. These months are tough for people. They want work. They're looking for work, but they can't find it. And so we may need to look at whether it's workfare programs, cash transfer programs. I think there really is a policy impetus for pursuing that kind of relief for people. And then also recognizing that the need for that might look really different in different regions or seasons, because it's not the case that there's unemployment is just sort of a stable thing. It varies by season. It varies by location, how much other kinds of non-agricultural work is available and so on. And I think the final thing it tells us really relates to government policies to try to encourage entrepreneurship in poor countries. That's like a really big deal. There's a big policy push around that. And I think we all have a sense that self-employment can be a trigger for growth. Mm-hmm. But this might help us understand why traditionally when governments have done things like give grants to self-employed businesses, the returns are often really low. Those businesses don't grow. And I think what we're seeing from our evidence is that because a lot of these businesses don't want to be businesses. These guys don't want to do self-employment. So don't give them a grant to make their business grow. Just give them a job.
Yeah.
What they want really are jobs. So I think what that means is we need better targeting mechanisms so that the people who want to do businesses, if we can target them with capital, they, I imagine, would really take off and there would be high returns for them. But we need a different set of policies for the people who don't actually want to be entrepreneurs.
So it turns out my survey idea wasn't such a smart one after all. Supreet, thank you for doing the really hard work on this. And thank you as well for coming in and talking about it today.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
The paper, Labour Rationing. The authors are Emily Brazer, Supreet Kaur, and Yogita Shamdasani, NBER Working Paper 28643. And it is also imminent in the American Economic Review, so look out for it there. This has been a Vox Dev Talk, and the best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org.